University of Liverpool, and my PhD is sort of in between the Department of Epidemiology and Risk Institute, but I'm using primarily qualitative study to explore sort of epidemiological subjects of dog bites. So just to provide a bit of an overview of why do we still bother with dog bites, between 2005 and 2015, dog bites increased by 76%. And in 2015, there were over 7,000 hospital admissions caused by dog bites, which incurred a cost to the NHS of approximately £4 million, and presumably much higher cost to the employers and individual bitten. They obviously have a very visible impact on individual health and well-being, and they are one of the leading reasons for healthy dogs, physically healthy dogs being euthanized. And one of the leading reasons for dogs being relinquished to dog shelters. So it's very much one health kind of subject and a problem that affects dogs' economy and people. In the same time, dog bite prevention has kind of been thought of in very narrow terms. In the UK, we have a policy which bans breeds and types of dogs which are presumed to be more aggressive and more likely to bite than other breeds. We also have a number of local legislations which ban walking and interacting with dogs in particular areas, and different organizations also have their own policies which, for instance, restrict interactions between employees and dogs. For instance, Royal Mail has this policy. Dog bite prevention is also assumed that the way to prevent dogs is through education. So one of the ideas behind education is that we can tell people what are the high-risk contexts of interactions. Another idea is that we can teach people dogs' body language, which is thought to escalate in kind of progressive manner like a ladder, so that people can notice that the dog is showing those stress signals and change their behavior. So the assumption is that the reason for dog bites is often lack of knowledge. And if we just give people this knowledge, they will change their behavior and act differently. In the same time, we know that people interact with dogs in different contexts, and that there are several kind of qualitative studies which explore dog bite perceptions of dog bites in dogs, which could influence how people interact with dogs. So one of those things is that people often think that a bite will never happen to them. They think it's the other people that get bitten. They also think that bite is just one of those things, something that you can't do anything about, it cannot be prevented. Understandably, they rarely blame dogs, they usually blame themselves or the dog owner. There are also several studies which have shown that aggression is often permitted and normalized in several contexts, which is challenging for prevention. People also think is that it's the other dogs, the dangerous dogs, dogs of particular breeds that bite, rather than aggression being something which is context specific and a kind of normal behavior of potentially any dog. We also know that there may be other factors that could shape interactions with dogs and likelihood of a bite. For instance, in the UK, dog bites are perfectly correlated with indices of deprivation. So poorer area, if you live in a poorer area, you're much more likely to get bitten than in other areas and kind of more well-to-do areas. So there are potential other factors that kind of structure those interactions with dogs that are, that we kind of don't know about. So my study is guided by kind of two questions. How do people negotiate safety around dogs, and what they actually do to stay safe around dogs, because we don't really know those aspects. And I explored those questions by working with people who interact and meet dogs in professional contexts and by interacting with regular dog owners. So specifically, I recruited participants with very diverse experiences of dogs and dog bites. I recruited bite victims who were bitten at work, specifically in different dog shelters and in different delivery companies. And I've recruited bite victims who were bitten outside of work. And these victims could be dog owners or non-owners, and they could have been bitten by their own dogs or other people's dogs. I've also spoken with people who interact with dogs in contexts where they kind of deal with risk of dog bites on a regular basis but have never been bitten. And I interviewed dog owners who have dogs that have bitten someone else and who have dogs that have never bitten. It's a bit of a mouthful. I've conducted participant observations, so I joined participants who work in dog shelters and that delivery companies and the daily activities and done the work that they were doing with them over 14 weeks. And I chatted with them in that time. And I've also carried out 41 in-depth qualitative interviews and analyzed kind of documents in different workplaces, which were supposed to guide people's interactions with dogs. And all of the fieldwork and data collection was carried out within Merseyside because it is the dog bite capital of the UK. And it just so happens that I live there. My analysis was carried out in the same time as data collection, which is quite common in qualitative research because in this way analysis can inform the way data is collected. So the questions I'm asking and exactly what I'm paying attention to when I'm carrying out my participant observations. And all of the interviews and observations were transcribed and coded. And then these codes were kind of reviewed several times until we developed themes which helped to summarize all of the kind of underlying perceptions. And one thing that was also guarding my analysis and data collection was the concept of positionality, which is a common in qualitative research, again, which is an idea that my own attributes and beliefs are shaping the questions that I'm asking and kind of what I'm paying attention to. So my background is in clinical animal behavior, so I was very much motivated by improving dog welfare, and I was perhaps much more, I found it much easier to work in dog shelters than with delivery companies, because it was kind of more natural environment for me. Okay, so despite plentiful of policies and regulations at work, my participants said that safety in interactions with dogs for them is an instinct. They described just feeling that their stomach suddenly drops when they're going into a kennel. They also described that they have to sometimes act against their instinct and manage it. After a bite, their instinct was often sharpened up, and they described feeling hyper aware of dogs in their environment and just seeing dogs all the time, and they've used this instinct to avoid certain situations. They also described how when they're assessing dogs, they're building on instinct rather than formal policies or behaviors. So they talk about developing a feel for the dog, and they describe how they're building this feel for a dog by watching dog in different contexts and reading the assessment of a dog and watching for specific behaviors that they describe as flashes of aggression. In the same time, we've noticed that regulation of own emotions was quite important for participants to stay safe. And the way they regulated their own emotions was by managing their kind of bodies and their actions. So here, one of my participants described how after a bite, he was scared of dogs and didn't want to run because he was fearful of dogs, but decided to run nonetheless because he wanted to override the feeling of fear so that he could maintain the relationship with dogs. So through his behavior, he ended up changing his emotions. And that was kind of his tactic to being safe around dogs. One of the important resources that participants were drawing on when interacting with dogs was confidence. They described that it's very important to develop specific type of confidence to work with perhaps more challenging dogs. And if you are bitten, you can lose your confidence, which makes it very difficult to work with dogs. So you need to act and interact with those dogs very quickly so you don't lose your confidence. They also describe a need to have confidence so that you can admit your weaknesses and that you don't know everything. So that was quite kind of important sense when working with people in dog shelters, that you should be confident enough to ask for help. And confidence was also something that made it exciting to work with dogs that were potentially challenging. So again, it was used as a resource for work. People also talked about using emotional contagion, which they saw between themselves and dogs as a resource. So they believe that dogs pick up on their emotions, and they felt that you can manage dogs by staging a positive type of contagion. So for instance, they thought that if you don't show fear and if you smile towards dogs, the dog will behave in a particular way towards you. And they spoke about even if you feel fear, if you project calm behavior, the dog will become calm. And even in dog shelter, one of the trainers described how through calm handling and feeling calm yourself, you can change physiology of a dog and really improve their behavior and make sure that this dog is safe around you. In the same time, emotional contagion was also a risk, because if you did not manage to regulate your own emotions, it could lead to a situation where a dog would pick up your emotions and react aggressively towards you. So one of the participants described how she believed that two men were bitten by her dog because they were fearful around that dog. And she highlighted herself that she's not entirely sure if they were bitten because they were anxious or because their anxiety caused particular behaviors around those dogs that the dog picked up on and led to a bite. And those emotions were projected and acted out through what we call body techniques, so for a particular set of behaviors that people thought were safe and gave dogs the kind of correct signals. So people named not looming over dogs, approaching dogs sideways and not approaching them face on is quite important. They also describe actually the pace of interaction as being as important as the interactions and actions themselves. So they thought of sometimes it's quite good to be quick and not faff around the dog, because if you faff around, the dog can become anxious. And they also describe a set of helpful body techniques when an attack is happening, what you need to do to kind of reduce the injury that you're already receiving. And in that context, they felt that keeping a dog away from a face and staying upright was very important. So just in summary, despite plentiful of kind of training that people who work with dogs receive and organization policies, most people interacted with dogs and assessed risk in dogs through emotions, and they found that that risk is basically an instinct, which led them to desire to manage their own behaviors and their own emotions, which was thought to be important to manage dog behavior. And when dog's behavior was managed, when dog's emotions were managed, the dog behavior was managed, and they kind of negotiated safety in this way. In the same time, there was a risk of emotional contagion, which could mean that the dog would pick up wrong emotions and act aggressively towards them, but this contagion was also used as a resource for managing dogs. So we know from previous research in psychology that risk is often used as a heuristic, so as a kind of short and dirty judgment. It has been identified as a feeling in the past. We know that feelings also change risk perception and assessment of risk. For instance, people who believe that nuclear power is something beneficial and have kind of positive affect around nuclear power see risk in nuclear power as lower than people who believe that there are no benefits to the nuclear power. We also know that emotions are important in decision making. People who have damaged areas of the brain and that are responsible for emotional processing often struggle identifying risk in the same manner as people who can react emotionally. And we know that people use emotions at work. There's plentiful of work in sociology which describes emotional labor and how people try to manage their own emotions to kind of meet the requirements of the employer. And we think that the same process may be taking part when interacting with dogs, while negotiating safety with dogs, in particular in the kind of occupational environment. And the way people do it is things through body techniques, so through training their own bodies in a very kind of physical way to behave in a particular way. A good way to explain body techniques is if you imagine how people do finger counting. Different cultures do different finger counting techniques, so it's the same concept which combines kind of use of a body with local culture and habits and norms which may be shaping exactly how this action is produced. So sort of the same thing operates in terms of dog training and in terms of interactions with dogs that people believe are safe. So just several implications for furthering bite prevention. There's a nice quote from Jan Zinn, who's a risk researcher, who said that experts are often puzzled about lay people not following good advice, presuming people's lack of understanding. While this may be true in many cases, a growing body of research shows rather than being merely ignorant or misinformed, people often have good knowledge when taking risk. It's just they are navigating a completely different landscape of risk, and they are taking different information into account rather than this information that experts may have on the subject. So we think that dog bite prevention policies and education typically assumes that dog bites are evaluated and managed kind of rationally through knowledge of dog behavior, and it's the lack of knowledge that leads to those bites. But actually our participants usually had the knowledge required to prevent those bites. They just did not act on it because of the emotions that they felt or because of relationships with dogs or other factors. So risk was assessed instinctively rather than kind of through by looking at checklist of behaviors. In this way, it's important to kind of appreciate those in-between strategies which are not necessarily empirical in negotiating risks, such as risk of bites. And my participant relied on trust, emotions, and intuition quite a lot when trying to stay safe in daily interactions with dogs. So just a final note, there's quite a lot of evidence at the moment for emotional contagion between people and dogs. There are quite a few recent papers which show that dogs can sense negative affects in people, and they recognize facial expressions and gestures. But it's unclear if these if this ability would actually contribute to them biting. But definitely, my participants saw that as the case. And we think that emotions can be regulated. Previous sociological research described, for instance, deep acting and surface acting. With deep acting, people try to change the underlying emotions, and in surface acting, they just act out as if they changed it. But both of those techniques rely on managing bodies and trying to manage one's emotions. And finally, we think that a lot of people talked about a need to improve, to make dog owners more responsible, and as this will improve bite prevention. However, our study shows that to be responsible, people need to be able to respond. And perhaps if they are not very skilled in managing their own bodies, even if they have knowledge of their behavior, they may not be fully responsible because they cannot use the skills needed to behave in kind of responsible manner. So we suggest that one way of kind of improving bite prevention in the future will be to focus not just on dog behavior but also on human behavior and improving owners and non-owners skills when interacting with dogs and kind of body awareness and perhaps almost emotional awareness in a way kind of leading to mindful dog ownership and to dog. Thank you very much. I'm happy to take any questions.